So I'll just say good morning. Thanks to the Vision Care section for accepting our paper. And I'll thank my co-author, Dr. Bob Buckingham, who's in the back hiding out. He'll answer all of the tough questions. He's my assistant dean of clinical affairs, my colleague, my boss, and anyway, has been gracious enough to work on this project with me. Okay. The Michigan College of Optometry at Fair State, I'm Renee Micah. The Michigan College of Optometry at Fair State University has been affiliated with urban community health centers for several years. In an attempt to strengthen our hand in the local rural community, we opened up dialogue a couple of years ago with family health care to initiate this campus community partnership. This presentation is going to focus on what we consider to be the first step on the road or the path to understanding local needs and values, particularly as it relates to vision and eye care. So I have to acknowledge several people. First and foremost, Danika T. At the top. She's a work study, a third-year optometry student, and I just have to give her a ton of credit for entering over 1,500 surveys into our data system, and she's still speaking to us, so I'm thankful for that. And then a bunch of other people, particularly the staff members, executive officers, the executive director at Family Healthcare, Linda Shively. And although his name isn't up here, I always have to include Roger Wilson, and Dr. Wilson from the New England College of Optometry and NEI, because he has been a tremendous resource for me personally and for us at the college. He's provided business model. He's provided just endless hours of free consultation, and someday he should charge us because he'd make some money off us. But anyway, we really appreciate the support. So as an overview, to set the stage today, I'll provide a little snapshot of what rural Michigan looks like for those of you that haven't had an opportunity to visit our little neck of the woods. If you do, perchance, visit within the next week or two, please wear orange because it is hunting season, and that's like a state holiday. There, seriously, kids have time off of school. And we keep our children and our animals inside during that time. There are plenty of gunshots to be heard every day. Dr. Buckingham's laughing. This is serious. I mean, students ask for time off. Our graduate students ask for time off to go hunting. I say no. So we'll present a few. We are overpopulated with deer, and it's amazing for the amount of hunters that we have, the number of deer that are shot every year. We still hit them on our street, my own street. Anyway, so I'm going to present. A few brief essential elements of what we believe to be a successful campus community partnership, or what we're trying to model anyway, and then I'll provide the rationale for us entering into this relationship with Baldwin Family Health, and certainly review the highlights of our vision care survey. There's a lot of data that I could share with you. I'm going to try to just go over the stuff that we think is most relevant, and this is across three rural clinics, community health centers that are all under this umbrella of family health care. So you know what I'm referring to. And then lastly, we'll conclude, certainly with some limitations. This is a local survey. This is not a robust scientific study, but we'll tell you how we're going to apply this information, what we think is useful, and certainly make some recommendations for a way forward. And I think that you'll find some of this information interesting. We had a couple of, I don't know if I'd call them surprises, but some interesting things that we've learned along the way that I certainly think would lend some support for future rural health research and policy efforts, particularly as it relates to eye care. So, how do we define rural? What does rural America look like today? I think you'd all agree with me that proverbial good life doesn't necessarily mean the healthy life or good medical care. There are lots of different ways of defining rural, and certainly valid existing definitions with statistical evidence, depending upon the context in which it's used, but we rather like the National Rural Health Association's recommendations that rural be applied to programmatic purposes as a designation rather than a definition. And so we're not going to make any attempt today to add to the definitions or to create our own. We simply wanted to put it in that context. Rural populations in the United States represent the majority of those that are 65 and older, those with poor health status, those below the poverty level, and a quarter of the population that's currently served by only 10% of U.S. physicians. So, in essence, rural populations are older, poor, and sicker. Okay, so give you a snapshot of what rural Michigan looks like. Now, again, it depends upon how we define rural. So in this particular map, this is the most recent map where Microtropolis is considered rural. Now, Microtropolis can be defined as a population anywhere between 10 and 50,000. So Metropolis is about 50,000 or more. So when you think about that, between 10 and 50, that's significant. But even if we take out and we consider or we define rural by where micro-tropolis is considered urban, we still find over half of our counties are rural. So this is where we are in Mikasa, outlined in red here in Mikasa County. That's where the college is. And we're one of the poorer counties in the state, where 38% of persons live below 200% of poverty. And about 20% of those are uninsured. So from a health professional shortage area perspective, just to give you an idea across the country, you can designate it by population group, but it shows you where shortage areas are. And again, here's our neck of the woods. Okay. I really do like Michigan, but we have some grim data here. So the percentage of poverty in Michigan, if we take a look here, and this is actually a 99 map, but it'll give you a gist, give you the idea. These two counties, Lake and Newaygo counties, are again, Lake County is one of the poorest in the state of Michigan and kind of leads the way in all the negative health outcomes that we're so familiar with. But this is where the three rural community health centers are housed. And so in 2005, just to give you a snapshot, Baldwin's median household income was about $15,500. Now, this has dropped $10,000 in the last, it was about $26,000 due to our declining economy. And I was going to make a joke about Republicans, but I'll refrain from doing that. I was going to joke that our economy is so eroded in our state. If you're not familiar with the state of Michigan and our current economy, it's not unlike other states, but our employment rates are sky high. We've got the automotive industry there that's just really in bad shape. And our economy is eroded so much so that our Republicans are even proponents of increasing our taxes. So you know that it's bad. So Michigan's poverty estimates, this just gives you one more look. So if you were looking at the entire United States with this poverty, HRSA estimate of poverty, by the way, that that website on the bottom gives you the ability to create your own interactive map. So if you are looking to create your own maps and you can pick and choose, that's a really good website to write down. So I just did this by estimates of population and poverty. Michigan is not unlike the rest of the United States in that the median poverty level is around 12% or 12.5. But you can see the light blue areas there between 15 and 30% highlight a couple of the counties that we work in. And so I just wanted to highlight that because it gives you an idea of, again, our neck of the woods. Among the many barriers to care, lack of education and poverty are perhaps the leading social determinants of any number of negative health outcomes, rurally or otherwise, and access to vision care and vision care services are no exception. Certainly these figures here are no surprise or are completely familiar to all the eye care professionals in the audience, and we even have Dr. Kevin Frick here, who was one of the leading authors of the Prevent Blindness Association's recent publication of the economic costs of visual impairment and the burden of a visual impairment with older adults, that it's on an increase of $50 billion in the states. So our rural populations are not singled out. We suspect they might have a higher proportion of vision impairment due to access issues and other unique barriers to care. And so it makes sense then that we look to federally qualified health centers. Certainly they're a primary medical home to the nation's underserved, and most of us, if not all of us here, are very familiar with the advent of the federally qualified community health centers over 40 years ago as part of Johnson's war on poverty, President Johnson's war. Poverty. So the percentage of community health centers that provide professional eye care services in the country, unfortunately, is about 18% or so. And in Michigan, that number is only 8%. That's really only two community health centers among the 26 that currently exist. So in Michigan, we have, among those 26 federally funded health centers, 141 service delivery sites that provide care to over 400,000 patients. So it makes sense for us to want to partner, especially locally, with a rural community health center. Okay. So going into this a couple of years ago, when we first started to initiate the dialogue and we started talking with the executive officers, we came to the table with some similar ideas, similar missions, and so forth. And here are some of the primary things that we started to talk about from the get-go. Certainly, we're committed to improving access to eye care, and they're committed to improving access as well. But we wanted to do that all under one roof, if possible, and we really wanted to be there inside their centers providing the care. We wanted to expand clinical experience for our interns, certainly, be part of workforce development in the community-based arena, and they didn't have any existing eye care services there. They referred out occasionally. I'm not sure that they have a real good idea of their referral rates, but they also had a desire to increase their they have to report for federal funding the percentage of dilated retinal eye exams for their diabetic patients, and their numbers were quite low. So that's how we got into this. So again, looking at the counties here, there's Baldwin. That's their home site. There's White Cloud in central Newaygo County, and then there's Grant, which is lower, and then again there's us in Mecosta, just to orient ourselves. So this is the model, of course, that we try to maintain. Admittedly, responsiveness to community includes or requires a high level of local consultation. Certainly power sharing. I think with academic institutions, the most important thing is that we need to relinquish this expert model of care and of consultation and really listen to our communities and share the decision-making and the power and the solutions to problems. Certainly we have to build capacity via consensus building, which requires local community voices. I think it's important when we came to the table that we said that we really had a desire to transform but not replace services there. There's sometimes an understanding that we're going to come in and shove somebody else out or take funding from another program, and that's certainly not our desire. And certainly reciprocity and long-term engagement through a memorandum of understanding or a service agreement should be the norm. Excuse me. So with these ideas in mind, we began this relationship, and we all agreed that we were interested in building a collaborative community eye care service that would be fully integrated, comprehensive vision care. And I put in italics of the community, not for the community. We really want this to be, just as all the other community health services, something that the community actually needs, asks for, and has a significant part of the decision-making and evaluating and monitoring of the process. So with that, the mutual understanding of these local access, utilization issues, and unique barriers that we all understand face rural populations, we felt that this understanding was requisite to adequately responding instead of just coming in and saying, you know, we know what's best for you. You need eye care. Your people aren't getting it. We're going to come in. One of the issues was local providers as well. And we had local providers that we had spoken to, and they were quite concerned that we were going to come in and take their patients away and compete. And over the course of time, we have been able to show them that they're really not taking care of these patients. This is a different subset of the population. Okay. So here are the major questions that we were seeking to answer. Do their patients seek care? How often? So what was the frequency of their utilization of care? Do their diabetics receive care? What are the most significant barriers to care? Among them, we expected transportation would be a huge one because we're in a rural area. Possibly cultural, ethnic differences. In one of the community health centers, we have a significant proportion of African-American patients. And then even though these are three relatively in the same geographic location, the lowest and most southern, we have several Hispanic Latino patients, a significant percentage of the population. Was that a 5 minute? Whew, okay, let me get rolling. So methodology, so we had over 1,500 adult and child. We had anonymous surveys. This was non-systematic distribution. We did make sure that every site conducted or distributed surveys over 15 days. These were to be distributed to every registered patient that came through the door. This did not happen. And this is the crux of the dilemma with community-based work. You're not there every day to make sure that things are done the way you'd like them to. So we'll discuss that under our limitations. But there are 28 items in the adult, 20 in the child. You can see what we covered here. And several items were borrowed or adapted from the BRFSS and the National Health Interview Survey. So the BRFSS, I'm sure we're all aware, but Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. And Dr. Norman Bailey, it's nice to have him in the audience because he might lend some discussion with the summary afterwards when we make a couple comparisons. Understand, again, I'm not purporting that we can compare this local rural study to large national numbers and make any generalizations, but we do have some interesting findings. So we did train the staff. We offered a gift certificate for the raffle. Anyway, here are some of the results. So you can see here that out of a total number of 1213 that responded, so for some of these items you'll have more or less people that actually responded, because some just left a couple of the items blank, but you can see where they came from. Most of them from White Cloud that had the largest population. Who filled out the survey? Largely females between the ages of 25 and 64, Caucasian. And now we're showing you the demographics. This is in aggregate across all three sites, but this is pretty typical of community health center populations, so we're not surprised here. We asked them the last time they had visited an eye doctor. This came from one of the national surveys, and we found that less than 50% from the past month to year, as you can see here, had visited an eye doctor. How often do you receive care from any eye doctor? And again, the frequency of utilization was about the same. This is maybe a little bit tougher to read, and we put the numbers instead of the percentages, although I'll give you that, because again, not everyone answered. But we had 68% do not utilize care on an annual or semi-annual basis. Diabetic, did they have an eye exam within the last year? 44% said no. We had, was it about the same, 46%? About the same number said no to having a dilated retinal eye exam. I don't have that slide up here. So just under half. Reasons for not visiting an eye doctor. So we found that among the most significant barriers to care, couldn't afford it, do not have eye insurance, and no reason to go. Very similar to the five states that reported on BRFSS. So again, we're not surprised there. Although, if I could go back, and I won't, we did find that transportation wasn't the issue that we thought it would be. Ethnic differences, cultural differences, these all tended to wash out across the board. Do you have any trouble seeing even when wearing glasses or contact lenses? Now, this is the NHIS-defined visual impairment. So out of their survey, this is how they defined whether a patient was visually impaired. We all understand that this is the patient's perception of the quality of their vision, but I think still just as important, we had 38% say yes. Now, if we take a look and compare, and I know we can't make these comparisons and generalizations in total, but if we just take a glimpse at the percent of visual impairment, so among that 38% that answered yes to that question, our patients are on the side. I've got 2 minutes. Okay. Our patients, if you look under the age group, the 50 to 64 age group in this first column here, our patients, our age category was 45 to 64, so okay, we have a population of 5 years younger up to 64, but then our over 65 population is represented, and we find that with our group, with our local group, that diabetes really wasn't a defining factor on the visual impairment scale. Okay, so now if we look at the BRFSS definition of visual impairment, the patients had to answer yes to one of the following questions. When I say yes, I mean between little difficulty and unable to do. So anything in red that was answered on one or both of those questions qualified them for visual impairment. And we found, we kind of swapped the pie chart from the NHIS data, and we found that 57% qualified to be visually impaired under this definition. And then I just show you below the five states that had reported, the lowest was Iowa, the highest was Ohio at 20%, and those are the other states that were included. Perceived barriers by visual impairment. We thought it was interesting just to take a peek. Certainly those that are visually impaired would not select no reason to go, or we didn't think they would, for perceived barriers, and certainly they didn't. Insurance and affordability was significant. We wanted to make sure it was important for them, the services to be there. They said that it was, and 86% said it would be convenient for them to receive eye care services there. So quickly with conclusions here, we do find that the patients are in need, that a great percentage of the patients aren't seeking the care regularly or utilizing care. Many of the diabetic patients are not receiving care. It costs, lack of insurance, no reason to go. We weren't surprised that this was similar to what we find across the country, and they certainly were interested in receiving care in-house. Now, I don't have to go into the details of some of these limitations because they're self-evident. One of the things to note is that these are all self-reported. I understand that for epidemiological research, that certainly we need standardized, we need statistical evidence of, or at least a well-defined, clinically-based assessment of visual impairment. But I do think even their patients' perceived quality of vision is quite important, especially on a local scale. That's what we need to know. Certainly selection bias is an issue, or may be an issue, we don't know. We recognize a significant problem with response rate, and let me try to explain very quickly. So we have some clinics that saw 83 patients, registered patients in a day. They may have offered a survey to all 83 patients, maybe had 5 refusals, maybe 1 exclusion under our eligibility criterion, and the rest were received. Most of the time, for the number that were handed out, 100% or 96 to 100% were returned. That's a great return rate. However, more often was the case that there were 40, 50, 60 patients registered, and only 5 were given that particular day. And so 5 were returned, and the staff would say to me, I would call them up and say, so how is the response rate? How did it go today? 100% response rate. And I said, fantastic. And then I found out after I looked at the numbers that it wasn't as great as I thought. And also the staff, the community, within the community health center, they were bothered that this took over about 3 weeks, because there were a couple holidays between May and June there when we did the study. And so it was taking forever. Well, part of the problem was that they weren't offering it to everybody in the first place. There were staffing issues. There were turnover issues. There were also provider issues. And so in spite of the fact that we had a well, I think, organized program and trained the staff, and everybody had buy-in, we had a huge meeting with staff and execs, and everybody thought this was great and had bought into it, we still had a lot of problems. Thank you very much for your attention.